Okay. Good morning, everyone. I'm on call meeting number 250 to order and ask Nicole if you could please call the roll.
Brad Crick.
Present.
Ashley Monroe. Here. Ellis Park. Adam Kane. Sherry Rolfe. Leslie Walls. Jamie Ward.
Present.
Jessica DeRochers.
Here.
Debbie Coxon.
Here.
Jesse Atencio. Lawrence Murakami.
Right here.
Janine Smith.
Here.
Jan Christensen.
Here.
Kim Eames.
Here.
Juan Gula. Jeff Baxter.
Present.
Trish Winters.
I'm here, but I'm not going to be able to stay the whole time.
Okay, thanks, Trish. Faye Gallant.
Here.
Jessica McCallum.
Here.
Jeanette Altman.
I'm filling in for her.
Dane for Jeanette. Sorry. Nate Bauer. Richard Machida.
Here.
Yorko Toivonen.
Here.
Chris Bex.
Here.
Evelyn Pinsgaard.
Here until about 9:45, and I have to leave for jury duty.
Thanks, Evelyn. Selena Brown.
Tom Langdon. Cindy Collins.
Here.
Tony Abbey. Anybody whose name I did not call? Was met.
All right. Thanks, Nicole. I'll go on to approval of the agenda for today's meeting. Is there a motion? And do we have a second?
Second.
Okay. Any changes to the agenda?
Yes, we have two changes. Under new business, Staff Affairs has a resolution proposing addition of language to UA Reg for allowing sick leave donation for bereavement. And also a resolution concerning leave share for those on intermittent family medical leave.
All right, so I'll add those as items E and F under new business. And let's see, I had a couple of changes to note. For our guest speaker, we'll have Brad Lobland from UAFHR and also May Marsh from Office of Diversity and Equal Employment Opportunity. And then, just as noted via email, Debu Mizra is President-elect for Faculty Senate. So he's President-elect for this coming year, and then the following year he'll be President for Faculty Senate. Okay, any other changes to the agenda? All right, any opposition to approving the agenda as amended? Okay, seeing none, we have an agenda. All right, and we have minutes for the March meeting, number 248. Is there a motion to approve the March minutes?
So move.
All right, motion and second. Any changes to the March minutes? Okay, any opposition to approving the March minutes as presented? And seeing and hearing none, we have March minutes. So we'll move to status of pending actions. I don't have any update at this time. I do know that the Chancellor has received the bullying awareness proposal, or not proposal, but the bullying awareness motion that we passed in March, I believe, to have the anti-bullying training be mandatory for supervisors on July 1, and to have the training be available to all employees by December 31st. So we heard from Kari and from the Chancellor at pre-staff that it's on his table to get an answer to us. So I assume we'll probably get something back via email within the next few weeks. All right, we're a little early for public comment, so I'll go ahead and just jump to officer reports. We've got a pretty full agenda today, so I think my remarks will be brief. We've got a lot of resolutions, and of course we have an election to cover today, as well as our guest speakers, and I think that's going to take a lot of time too. So let's see, what I wanted to share with you all, a couple of the items on our agenda, and you'll hear more about them when we come to them, refer to suggesting some changes to university regulation. And right now, UA is reviewing policy and regs. There are some policy revisions available. I can share out that URL after the meeting. But they have some suggested changes that they've made, and you've seen or should have seen in the last 3 weeks some of the suggested changes that were sent to governance groups for review, the travel reg changes. There were some HR reg changes that I got a little belatedly. And so if that holds, we should have an opportunity to comment on future reg changes. The president has the authority to change regulation. The Board of Regents has to change policy. And in principle, governance groups should have an opportunity for feedback before that happens. I'm not entirely sure if that always works that way in practice. I think it's incumbent on us to make sure that we're part of that process. But I wanted to highlight that with respect to these resolutions that are now on our agenda, because it's right now a good time to say these are things we'd like to see in reg or in policy, and this is one way we can introduce it. And then, in theory, adopt the regulations, either with our changes or without. But in theory, when that happens, we should have another time opportunity to comment. And so, if, for example, they didn't take any action on anything we may do today, or may do at a later date, that could be something that we could comment on at that time. So I also wanted to report to you, last meeting or the meeting before, I talked a bit about the System Governance Council and some possible changes to that group. Previously, it was made up of the leadership of the local governance groups from each campus and from statewide. The System Governance Council had a proposal on the table to change its membership. When I last spoke to this group, I was under the impression that it was going to be 3 staff, 3 faculty, 3 students, and 3 alumni from the alliance level governance groups. So as chosen by Staff Alliance, as chosen by Faculty Alliance, by the Coalition of Student Leaders, to include their chairs. The actual vote, the actual motion turned out to be only 2 members from each group, which was not my understanding. I did vote no because I felt that we should have 3 members of each. From each group, that would be a better representation for staff and for students. But that was not part of the motion, and the overall group did vote to change its membership. So going forward, System Governance Council, it consists of 2 members from Faculty Alliance, Staff Alliance, the Coalition of Student Leaders, to include their chairs, and then 1 other member. And then 3 representatives from the Alumni Association, from 1 member each from each campus for the Alumni Associations. Something else related to some of the items that came up for Staff Affairs, and hopefully I'm not stealing any of your thunder, Faye, but Jennifer Youngberg and I met to talk about leave donation and FML issues, and we had talked a bit about some various options, including, and unfortunately I didn't get to bring this up to the Chancellor, including informal recognition, which is something that supervisors can do for their employees. You can give an informal recognition award of up to 3 days leave or up to $500, and it's basically dependent on budget and dependent on whether or not your dean or director would sign that memo. But it's something we discussed as potentially could be an option for an issue where maybe there's some hardship that an employee is facing. Another thing that came up out of that I wanted to bring up to staff council at large is the idea of a staff council sunshine fund. What if staff council collected funds on its own, collected and maintained funds, and then had our own sunshine fund? Some departments have it where under certain circumstances, if an employee is facing a hardship, if they've if there's been a medical emergency, a loss in the family, they can apply to their group for some kind of funds. For the library, it would be something small, a gift certificate for dinner if they, you know, perhaps had left town, or you might expect they may not have time to cook, or flowers, or but something tiny. So the question came up, what if staff council had its own sunshine fund? And then, of course, it would be up to us to write out our rules for how that would work, be up to us to conduct it and to maintain it. So I wanted to bring that out to council just to see if there's any interest in moving forward on that. And then, let's see, what was the last thing? The last thing I wanted to bring up was came out of pre-staff. The chancellor asked us a question. Do you have the exact wording that I got from Tari? Thank you. He's thinking about ways to help encourage employees to complete their mandatory training. And I think one thing that came up in the past was an idea of if you don't complete all your mandatory trainings, you don't get travel funding. He floated the idea of the hospital currently does, if you don't complete all your mandatory trainings, you may not receive your pay increase for that year. And so his question is, what do we think about those kinds of systems? What can we do to encourage training? He wanted to note really strongly that he's not saying that starting in FY15 or FY16 or FY17, FY17 may be a little too far out, but that we're going to have a system where you need to complete your trainings or else. But the question of how can we best complete training, and I thought this was particularly germane for staff council because we did just pass a resolution asking the university to add another mandatory training.
And just to clarify, the mandatory training that he was referring to are safety trainings and supervisor trainings for those who are supervisors.
Yeah.
I have a comment on that note.
Sure.
I'm from Dillingham. This is Selena.
So, Selena, you have to speak in real close to the mic, and then everyone online will be able to hear you, too.
Scare everybody.
Yeah.
The supervisor trainings have not been available to us in the rural areas via audio or e-live, so that would be really difficult to comply with that request. As much as we would love to take our supervisor training.
Yeah, thank you. I think we did note that in pre-staff, but it's worth pushing back even harder because I'm not sure that, the head is always aware of what the hands are doing and not always aware of what the exact training schedules are.
Absolutely.
So Chris, I saw you had a comment. We did hit 9 o'clock, so I just wanted to ask, do we have anyone for public comment? Or anyone online for public comment? Okay, not hearing anyone. Chris, please go ahead.
Yeah, I also, the one kind of related to her comment is that, for example, my manager just got told he needs to complete performance evaluations by July 1st. That's less than 2 months' notice to finish that for every employee. That's on the statewide side, not UAF. But we do have to, I'm not against kind of incentivizing completion of training. I'd rather see rewards than penalties. And I'm concerned with the time frame. I guess as long as you have enough time to complete that, I think that's okay. In this case or in her case, training hasn't been available. How am I supposed to complete that? And if the result of that then is that you're penalized by, let's say, not having travel funding, I think that sends the wrong message.
I'm wondering, on a related note, I was under the impression that we're pushing more for performance evaluations to be done regularly and more systematically as opposed to kind of ad hoc. And it might be worth having a training section in the performance evaluation if we're kind of pushing that as a our employees meeting expectations and ticking off their boxes, and one of the expectations would be that training is completed.
So you mean like on your performance evaluation form there would be a section for training, and you and your supervisor would say, you know, yes, you know, Jane Smith has done all of her training for this year?
I think honestly penalties, I don't know that penalties are required if people have a deadline. I think part of the issue with people taking the training is there's hasn't been a deadline to get it done by, and so it's not a high priority when there are a million other deadlines competing. But if you knew you had a performance evaluation coming up in a month and you were supposed to have your training done before that date, and that could be something arranged between the supervisor and the employee, then that might just move it a little better. I guess I'd like to see deadlines before penalties. I think that would move it more for people.
Hey there, this is Kim on the phone. I just would like to say that last year the CLA Dean, Todd Sherman, every single week or every single time they had a department chair meeting, he'd say, make sure your staff and faculty are doing their training. Make sure, make sure, make sure. And our department chair told us every single faculty meeting, and it wasn't until the dean put out penalties that it finally got done, because it takes longer than they think, and they're just ridiculous. But the thing that worked for the dean is that departments could not apply for the tech refresh funds until at least 90% of their people had finished the training.
Was that the only stick, the only penalty then?
Yeah.
And that did the trick?
Yeah. I mean, it got... we're lucky that we have a small department and a department chair that is pretty bulldoggy when she needs to be. And so we not only got all of our faculty and staff, we also got our student workers, which, by the way, are required to do it too, which we learned this year.
Yes, and getting student employees caught up on all the training can be difficult because they work much shorter hours. You often want them to start doing something for you. That's why you hired them, but you need to stop and you know, do, I think it took us four to 6 hours to do all the safety training for our student employees.
Yeah, boy.
Any other comments on either on training or on anything in my report before I turn the mic over to Ashley for the Vice President's report?
This is Yarko. There seems to be, like, especially for OIT folks, there's a confusion which training we're supposed to take, because statewide and UAF can't agree on what the list is. So currently, my understanding is that we have to take both statewide training and UAF training, which is fairly redundant in some, like, especially safety trainings. But the risk management and the UAF safety, they haven't given us, they haven't told us which one we're supposed to list or which list to go by. So I think that's part of the OIT's problem, is that we don't really pay much attention to it till they know what is required from us. So,
Chris,
and that goes for more than just training. I think that's a problem for administrative leave, which we saw in November.
Yep.
I think Brad, you kind of mentioned that then, and it goes for pay, HR, anything HR related. If you're in a department that falls under statewide, but you're actually paid by UAF, who are you supposed to listen to? And usually, by not having any policy set, employee loses. It's usually to the detriment of the employee. It doesn't really benefit them. It benefits the university not having one, but it doesn't benefit the employee at all.
Do you know if the statewide administration assembly does anything sort of outreach for OIT? Do they run into these problems or take feedback? I know Dana Plata is on that group for, and she's an OIT employee, but
I know Britton Anderson is in there too.
Okay.
So I'm sure they got the vibe, especially with that rain day or when the statewide was closed. And I had to tell my guys, that UAF funded guys, that they have to take annual leave while we took an administrative day. So it was kind of, it wasn't a pleasant conversation.
But when it comes to training, you all have to, whether it's statewide, UAF employees still have to go to training. So, yeah, there's no.
Yeah, I'm wondering if it might help for UAF and SAA to combine forces on this to try and push on the problem of where OIT employees fall, you know, what happens in these circumstances that keep coming up.
Brad, this is Selena. On that, we'd like clarification also on CRCD and UAF, because we have rules that we have to comply with CRCD as well as UAF, and sometimes it's just double the work when it can just, you know, we can all work together and just get it all done at one time.
Okay. Thanks, Selena. All right. And with that, I'm going to turn this over to Ashley so she has some time for her report. Sorry.
No, okay. I have a written report that's attached. So I won't go into too much detail. A lot of meetings that I attended this month were actually probably more, we talked more about issues that would involve faculty. So we talked about the student satisfaction survey moving towards one survey at the end of classes. Those bubble forms that the students fill out, there was talk about moving those electronic, but the concern is that electronic surveys have low response rates, and how would we, would that be something that would affect faculty? We talked a lot about out-of-state tuition changes and updates to programs, so eliminating some programs from catalogs that have actually been inactive for a while but are still on the books, and so that's going to be something that goes through the Board of Regents probably in one of these upcoming meetings. Actually, none at UAF were mentioned. They're mostly at UAA and UAS, and then those students being referred to similar programs at UAF, that UAF would maintain those programs. So one being the CIOS and other computer occupational endorsement and certificates, that if students were interested in Anchorage and Juneau areas, they would be referred to similar programs at UAF. Alex testing has been a big concern from some faculty as well as staff in UAA, and concern from the region. So that's going to be something that the Statewide Academic Council is going to be taking a look at and monitoring. And then this is something that actually got brought up at one of our meetings, is the existence of the Alaska Distance Gateway. And I can't remember, Brad, you'll have to help me, which meeting was this a discussion, and we were in C&D next door.
Was it the OMB meeting? Okay. I don't remember, but Nicole's memory has saved us. It's the meeting we had with OMB to discuss some of the things that were coming into the budget options group.
Yes, and there was questions posed by a couple of people in that meeting, so in this group, about the Alaska Distance Gateway and the lack of knowledge that it existed, and I guess that is actually a concern outside of this group as well. And so Statewide Academic Council is going to be taking a look at running some analytics and getting a counter to see how many people actually visit that Alaska Distance Gateway, and perhaps doing away with it if numbers are not improving or if that website is not utilized. Other things that we've talked about is the Common Calendar and Faculty Senate I believe, did not approve that or did not endorse it, and that was mentioned, and that was actually tabled to the next statewide academic council meeting that will happen later on this summer in person. Other than that, it's been working on Staff Appreciation Day, which I hope you know is tomorrow, and so we're getting prepared for that. Please make sure that you attend and support your staff, especially during the longevity and award ceremony. We do have one award, the Outstanding Staff Council Achievement Award, which will be given away tomorrow morning right here in this room. And let's see. Pre-staff Brad covered. We talked about bullying awareness training, and the other one was the just the follow-up on what we've been discussing as the temporary staff. And the Chancellor's Office is hoping to have some wording for a policy ready this summer, and that will go to the Executive Board, assuming that we approve the motion, the pending motion on the agenda later today, that we cancel the June meeting and allow actions to go to the Executive Board. That's all I had.
I had two things I forgot. I should mention that the Staff Alliance meeting is next week, so we have not had our May Staff Alliance meeting yet. And then I also wanted to add that I was invited to a minors on campus training, a safety training in mid-April, and protection of minors training. And I think we'll probably ask Kari here about that here in just a moment. But what I heard from that training is that there will be a survey that goes out or will go out to deans and directors to ask them whether or not their departments serve minors or have any events with minors on campus. And so the follow-up question we had at pre-staff was sort of, you know, what do staff who work with minors or put on events that work with minors, how do they proceed? Because it sounds like we're getting rolled out with training, but I don't think it's gotten fully out there yet. It is in the, if you've seen the supervisor training, the new tool that's still in kind of a prototype stage, it's included there. And there's also a section on health, safety, and risk management's page for minors on campus and what you do if you have an event with minors on campus. But I don't think it's been publicized. So with that, are there any last questions or comments for Ashley or I?
Hey, this is Evelyn from Cusco-Quim. Although you say the minors training hasn't been published yet, once you declare you will be having minors, for example, recently I had a group of high school students coming in for a tech prep orientation. I was required to take the protection of minors training.
So it was something before you had that event, you knew it was a training that had to be done?
I was informed by Fairbanks that I had to take it prior to the students coming in, but it was like very shortly before, I would say within a week, I was notified I had to take it because it was something new.
Okay. Well, that's good. Maybe not the week's notice, but it sounds like the word is getting out there.
Yes.
This is Kim again from Theater and Film. We had a safety training that was required for all majors this spring. And we included the minor training because our film club and our student drama association, they sometimes have minors involved in the productions. And the one thing that we took away from that is it depends on who you ask and what day you talk to them is what answer you're given of what's required. Extremely frustrating. So you might have to talk, if you're going to have an event in which minors are participating and being supervised by university employees, you have to dig to find out what's really required of you.
Yeah, and the other thing that came out of that protection of minors training is it's not just your employees. If you have volunteers or anyone else, you know, as part of your event, they may have to be trained as well. trained and cleared, depending on certain circumstances.
Yes, the Jazz Fest 2 years ago, Linda Harriger in music found out less than a month before Jazz Fest that all 50, 60 something of the student workers, faculty, staff, volunteers would have to be background checked. And thankfully, she was able to apply for the, what's it called, money from the safety department to help cover that cost.
This is Evelyn again. Before we were allowed to spend any funds from our grant for having the students come in, everybody had to complete their training, the minor training, the background checks, et cetera. If everybody, staff, students, and the volunteers didn't complete the training, we could not spend money to get them in or room and board or anything.
Okay, thanks, Kim. Thanks, Evelyn. That is really good to know. I'm going to go ahead and move on our agenda. We have Kari Burrell here to speak for the Chancellor. And I will say at pre-staff, we talked to the Chancellor a little bit about the schedule for this year, and unfortunately our schedules just haven't matched up. And so we said, you know, for next year, we will, before we pass our 2015 calendar schedule, we'll share it with the Chancellor's office. And if there are any obvious meetings, then hopefully we can help avoid schedule conflicts. There are many other meetings that he doesn't know in advance and thus can't avoid, but if there are places where we can help out, we can do that for next year.
Great. Thanks, Brad. So as Brad mentioned, the Chancellor unfortunately is in Portland.
I think you may just have to speak right into the microphone.
Can you guys hear me?
Yes. We'll do it this way. Oh, that works. Okay. So the Chancellor is in Portland. He's there for one of the regular NCAA GNAC meetings. And so he does have some standing meetings on his schedule that if we could try to schedule either his meetings around or these meetings around, we'll try to see if we can't get him here more regularly. I have a few things that I wanted to touch on. It has been a pretty busy time in the Chancellor's office. It's commencement season. He was able to travel to some of the rural commencements, not all of them. We had a busy week of commencement activities in Fairbanks as well, and so that took up quite a chunk of time. He also recently traveled to Sweden for the U-Arctic meeting. He is the chair of the Board of Governors for the University of the Arctic, which is a consortium of universities and other non-governmental organizations that are interested in Arctic research issues and Arctic education issues. It was a good meeting in that we had initial conversations with both Finland and with Canada about doing some joint pooling for research projects, and then we also had some good conversations with Greenland about a student and faculty exchange there, so there may be some promising things there. And also related to Arctic, we recently learned that it is likely that the U.S. State Department will be scheduling a series of meetings in Fairbanks in 2016, so this is out a couple of years. A lot of planning work goes into this, but in next year, the United States takes over as chair of the Arctic Council. The Arctic Council is the consortium of the eight Arctic nations, and right now Canada is the chair of the Arctic Council. The U.S. will take over the chairmanship in 2015 for a two-year period, and during their chairmanship period, the U.S. State Department would like to schedule the round of meetings that it needs to have for the Arctic Council in its Arctic state, which is Alaska. And so we had visitors here from the State Department a couple of weeks ago looking at venues in Fairbanks and on campus here for where they might be able to schedule some meetings. We're really looking forward to having both the senior Arctic officials meeting here possibly in March of 2016 and then also a very large Arctic science meeting that week as well. So if we are able to pull that off, we'll have an awful lot of international visitors here in March of 2016. I wanted to go back and talk a little bit about a couple of pending items that we have that we've been working on, I apologize, for some time with a staff council reminding us, prompting us, when are you guys going to get this done? So one of those is working on an anti-bullying training policy for UAF. What would that look like for UAF? We have from the staff council the resolution that you guys worked on in your last meeting recommending that anti-bullying training be required for supervisors beginning July of this year and then also available for staff by the end of December this year. The chancellor has reviewed that, has had a number of conversations with our HR department and with our diversity and equal opportunity office and agrees with the staff council's resolution, so you should be getting something back pretty soon here with his acceptance of that recommendation from the staff council and outlining what that will look like for UAF. And then similarly, the staff council has been raising the issue of policy for encouraging rehires of laid off non-permanent employees we have or term employees. We have a policy where we create an internal applicant pool right now for laid off permanent employees, and we don't have something similar in place for term employees. The chancellor does want to create a similar policy for term funded employees who are laid off. And so Brad Loplin, and I don't know if he's, oh, he is here, is working on that, and we'll probably talk some more about that. But the chancellor has said we do want to get that policy set up and into our written UAF policies and posted online so that people are clear about what our policy is there. I wanted to also thank the staff council for sending forward some excellent nominees for the Chancellor's Cornerstone Award. He did indicate it was very difficult to choose amongst the nominees. He has selected someone that will be announced tomorrow, but he just wanted to thank you for sending forward those great options to choose from. Budget planning, just wanted to give you an update on where we are on that, the ongoing saga of planning for fiscal year 15 budget gap. We have had underway now the planning a budget committee that Chris Beck serves on, and I think Duella is an alternate for. That group is sort of midway through its process. It's really been focused on the fiscal year 15 issue and hasn't even started thinking about what fiscal year 16 will look like. So they're getting close to wrapping up on fiscal year 15 recommendations, which has been taking a look at all of the reduction ideas and any revenue ideas that were submitted to the committee both by the budget options group and then by other people coming in through the web or just grabbing committee members with their ideas. They have gone through that. They are in the process of rating those in terms of feasible and a good idea all the way down to the, we think this is a terrible idea and we don't recommend it be implemented. So they're working on that sort of rating scheme. We have scheduled this week an executive leadership workshop, which is a meeting of about 60 folks who are senior administrators at the university to go through the recommendations that we are getting from the Planning and Budget Committee. They will be able to weigh in with some thoughts, and then those, both of those packages, the information from the Planning and Budget Committee and from the executive leadership workshop will go to the Chancellor's Cabinet next week. And we are hoping to have some final decisions about what we are going to do to address the budget gap in fiscal year 15 by the end of May or the first week of June. And then following on to that, we don't want to be entirely doom and gloom, so we do want to start thinking about what fiscal year 16 would look like, what we're going to propose to the President and the Board of Regents in terms of what UAF would like to have for fiscal year 16 budget. And so we will be asking the Planet and Budget Committee to take up that work next. So the last thing I have on here is just a quick pitch for folks to sign up for the Heart Walk. This is something where it's a voluntary activity for UAF employees, but we do have a friendly competition with Fairbanks Memorial Hospital. They are currently have more people signed up than we do, and so the Chancellor would love to get to 200 people signed up, and I think we had 197, so we're close. So if there was anybody who was thinking about it and was on the fence, he would love to have three more people sign up. So that's everything that I have to share this month. If anybody has any questions, I'd be happy to kind of see if I can answer those. All right. Quiet group this morning. Thank you.
All right. Thanks, Kari.
Thank you.
All right. And so next on our agenda, we have Debbie Misra here in the room for Faculty Senate. It's the new president-elect for Faculty Senate.
Thank you. Well, good morning, all. I don't have anything to say today. Just I'm here for the first time, and I'm looking forward to working with the staff council next year. And basically, I'm trying to learn. Just got elected, so and took office. So have worked with Brad a little bit in the past. I did send out a health choice plan. I don't know if that was circulated or not, but if it is not, that's okay. just looking forward to working with you all. You know, any issues or anything that I can help with, I'll be more than happy to do. Thank you.
Thank you. And that the health plan analysis you mentioned that you forwarded to us. So Ashley and I decided to send that out to our unit listservs. It was a health plan analysis done by a UAA professor of the current health plan options. And that was vetoed by the governance office.
Oh, that's okay.
So I can share it with staff council right now. I can tell you that I have a drafted email to ask a little more about sort of specific limitations of the listserv, what's expected, especially given in the past we have sent out some health information that did not come directly from UA benefits, for example, our healthcare calculators that we did in previous fiscal years. And so to ask a little more about that and what that is. But I don't have a whole lot to say about that right now. But that's what that is. If you're interested in seeing it, I can share it. And I appreciate it being shared. I thought it was very interesting.
Are there any questions? All right, thank you.
Thanks, Debu. All right, do we have anyone online for ASUAF? Okay. All right, so it doesn't look like we have anyone from ASUAF today. We have next on our agenda Brad Loblin and Mae Marsh. If you were about 5 minutes early, so we can take a break for 5 minutes, or if you're ready. So we have a break scheduled at 10:05. So I think we're ready to go. So. Anywhere you like, but I think up at the top of the tables is usually best. So let's everyone in the room see.
I apologize. Can you hear me?
Can everybody hear me?
Yes.
Okay. I apologize if I sound like I'm gasping for air. I am. I have a really bad allergy, so I'm not going to pass out or anything. But if it sounds like I'm going to lose air, just give me a minute. What I went ahead and passed out was the workplace bullying training that me and Mae Marsh, Director of Equal Opportunity and Diversity, are doing for Staff Appreciation Day tomorrow. This training is also in consultation with the Chancellor and Kari. This is something that is very needed on campus, and then also staff council would like to see supervisors and people trained on workplace bullying. So statewide had rolled out initially a training on workplace bullying. I attended the training. I took the PowerPoint, and I made a few changes to it. I branded it and made it more UAF and with May's help. So we're here today to share it. I wanted to send it out earlier, but it's been really busy, and I didn't get a chance to send it to you beforehand. I am looking for your feedback. We have offered Staff Appreciation Day if you'd like to come tomorrow to the training to offer feedback to me and May. We'd appreciate that. If you want to look at the training now and send us an email on anything you'd like to see added or deleted or questions or comments, we'll try to incorporate everything in.
Pardon, Brent. Is it 1:35 to 2:35 tomorrow? Is that right? Do you recall?
Let me look at my calendar.
Okay. I signed up for it. So if you've already registered, I guess if people have already registered for Staff Appreciation Day and they have time and are interested, can they walk in? Would that be
I think it seats 80.
Yeah.
So yes, I'm not a stickler for registration. Come.
My other comment on that is just if there is low attendance, please don't think that there's not interest in the training. It's just up against a lot of other sessions.
Yeah, I realize that. And I mean, this isn't on Staff Appreciation Day. It's not what you really want to go to, is to find out how to deal with a bully. But some people are interested in it, and it's just a way to get it out there. We are going to be doing this training throughout the next several months as part of the initiative to get everybody trained. But it is a very serious topic. It's not just a topic for UAF, but it's nationwide. It's growing. But we need to really define what bullying is for people, and this training does that. What me and May have done, without going into great detail, is we've separated into four areas. So we have workplace bullying. We have inappropriate conduct, which sometimes can be on the border of workplace bullying. We have performance management, which sometimes is viewed as bullying. And then we have discrimination and unlawful harassment. So those are the four areas in our training that we're really going to be discussing so people can understand what are the differences. So
I've got it on my calendar at 12:30.
Okay. Well, it should be on the Staff Appreciation Day schedule.
Okay. So not having been able to review it prior, is there any questions, concerns, comments? This training, the pieces of this training are going to be incorporated into the supervisory training, as well as May Marsh does a training called Respect in the Workplace. That has been a part of Respect in the Workplace for some time. So there's different avenues that we talk about it. It's just not in this workplace bullying training, but we talk about it in other trainings as well. So we can come back to that if there's any questions. I did want to touch on the term funded.
Yeah, well, if on the bullying awareness training, I guess if I ask May, I know at the Rural Affairs meeting that you attended a couple months ago, you talked a little bit about, you know, bullying, where it said if it's bullying because of a protected class, well, then it falls under your office. Can you talk a little bit about that?
Yeah. If you look at our policies cover different types of behaviors. And bullying is like an umbrella word that talks about people's inability to get along, fighting in the workplace. So bullying is an umbrella term where a lot of different behaviors are identified under that umbrella. In addition to that, if the conduct that we're seeing, the bullying conduct, is based on a protected class, then it can be discrimination because it can be harassment that comes under Title VII. So, for instance, if I'm in the workplace and they're calling me a dinosaur, they're telling me I'm old, I don't know how to work the computers, it's just, you know, continually making comments about my age, then that could be discrimination because the conduct is based on my age. And so, you know, the different categories are race, color, national origin, sex, disability, religion, age, sexual orientation, disability, religion. I don't know, there's nine of them. So, you know, if it's one of those protected categories, then Brad shifts it over to my office, you know, to assist with it.
I have a question. Is there a plan to have this available online or not in person so that people can kind of take it on their own schedule?
Well, part of the goal with the supervisory training was the chancellor asked me to make it more interactive. And I'm a firm believer that you need to come to training and be with your peers and really talk about things because you learn from others' experiences. So to answer your question, obviously, yes, it'll probably be online at some point because we just put supervisory training on Blackboard, and it's actually about 6 hours long versus the 9 hours. But we really want people to come to the training, and for a while we'll probably offer it as a group setting because that's really where people are going to learn and take it seriously because this is a very serious topic. And it turns in, bullying can turn into violence, it can turn into low productivity, I mean all kinds of things. And so we really want people to come together to hear the same message.
Okay.
So, but yes, eventually it will be online.
Thank you. No, I agree that in person is definitely really valuable, but just to make sure that everyone has an opportunity if they can't make it.
Absolutely.
That time. So, great.
And I think when we're first rolling out a training, you know, just like we brought it to you to look at, that, you know, when we deliver the training over, you know, a series of times, we learn what's important. You know, what specific items are people interested in, and make sure that we talk about those. Now, to put it online, then it's going to have to be in the slides or incorporated in some way.
And Anita Hartman, the Associate Director for HR, she did that with supervisory training, and she worked with CDE, and it's online, it's on Blackboard. She built in some tests and things like that, so we can do that as well. But for a while, we'll probably do targeted trainings with groups.
I have a quick question. Could you give me the website for the supervisor training? I wasn't aware it was available.
The website for supervisory training is www.uaf.edu/UAFHR, and then training.
Okay. Thank you.
Our website's not the best, but I know it's under training.
Okay. Thanks.
So another question relating to the bullying awareness training. When we met, Staff Alliance got a chance to talk with Mike O'Brien about some of the training, and one of the things that he told us was, if I'm recalling correctly, an employee can make a good faith report, and that is protected. I mean, so what does that look like? What do I do if I feel like I'm being bullied, maybe I don't know, what should I do? And then can I face any consequences if I, you know, if I report? You know, what could happen?
Well, you can't face any consequences for reporting, because that's an oxymoron to just everything. We want people to report things. However, you can't be disciplined for reporting things, but if you're involved in it, and this has happened before where somebody brings a complaint forward and they're actually the reason why there's an issue, and so that may be something they can be disciplined for, but you know, I say, and may have a different approach, but come talk to us before you launch something officially. We'll help you launch something officially, but we want people to come and talk to us first, because we may be able to help people decide whether it is bullying, is it inappropriate conduct that needs the supervisor or the supervisor needs to address, is it discrimination, Mays area, or is it simply performance management? And so we really want people to come forward and make those claims if they are in fact true. You cannot be disciplined, though, for reporting an incident.
And if you look at my area in the in our policies, it's not a complaints process, it's a resolution process. So, you know, the sooner, the earlier, the better, because it's like a bad marriage. If you let it go on forever, you just can't reconcile it. So, you know, bring it earlier rather than later.
And where, what would be the first step? Where would you go to report? Or to talk?
You can go to one of the HR consultants. You can contact my office. And your supervisor is really your first step. If that's not working, you can go up to the person above them. Because the first thing I ask when you come to my office is, have you talked to your supervisor? Because they really have the responsibility for creating an environment where folks can work and be productive.
Well, what if an employee feels that their relationship with their supervisor is not very strong? What if they feel that if they try to bring certain things up to their supervisor, they may face some repercussions for it, and they may hear that, well, no, you can't be disciplined for reporting something, but you know, they don't work with you, they work with their immediate office.
If it's about the supervisor, the supervisor is actually the bully, then come to HR or to May's office. Because that's when we're going to start peeling back the onion to figure out what is the actual issue and what needs to be addressed. It's
it's all case by case. You know, we can say broadly, go to your supervisor, broadly go to the person above your supervisor, or come to Brad's office or my office. And what we do is we work together to determine what is the best resolution.
And there's multiple ways. There's multiple ways of bringing concerns forward. With the hotline coming on soon, I'm assuming that is going to be another avenue for people to report these incidents. So there are many avenues to report. But if you don't feel like actually putting in writing and reporting it, call me.
And I've got an online anonymous reporting system too.
Is that on EEO's website?
Right.
Okay.
I mean, sometimes it's difficult if someone wants to report something anonymous. It creates its own issues trying to look into things, not knowing, you know, the details or the individuals. But I mean, we try to clean it up if we can.
Mm-hmm. Right. Are there other questions for Brad or May on the?
Brad started to mention he were going to touch on the term funded subject.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. So, are there any other questions on the bullying awareness training or the anti-bullying training?
I just have a comment that I'm glad to hear that you have an anonymous reporting, because there has been a concern at our campus about saying anything about anything, because their name has to be used, is what we were told by HR, and nobody wants to have to deal with the repercussions after that. So a lot of things don't go reported. So I'm glad to hear you can be anonymous. So I will encourage them to do so.
Yeah. Now, I can't launch a formal, investigation or anything like that if it's anonymous, because we have to know exactly what's going on.
That's
but,
understandable.
You know, if I get issues that are brought to me, then I'm going to go back to the supervisor to find out what's going on, or go to Brad. You know, we'll be looking at it.
Okay. Thank you.
All right. Any other questions on the bullying awareness topic?
So can I just give our emails? Addresses. If you have comments, feedback that you'd like to email us on the training, it's B.A. Lobland, L-O-B-L-A-N-D, at alaska.edu. And then May's is M. Marsh, M-A-R-S-H, 36, at alaska.edu.
I think he emails me too much.
There was 36 May Marshes. That's what scares me.
Wow.
Do you want to start?
Okay. Yeah, I think we are
okay.
Ready to
jump
to. Well,
I know Kari had touched on the term funded policy, and I actually have just finished the draft of the policy, and I didn't bring that today just because it is in draft, and I need to vet it through a couple other areas. But what we're working on is all non-represented staff and faculty who are non-renewed prior to their contract being ended, or they're non-renewed on June 30th or at the end of their contract, we are going to have them placed into a pool, an applicant pool, where we're going to treat them as laid-off employees. So we're going to give them an opportunity to be rehired into the university before we actually post jobs. It does not guarantee that they will be rehired into the job, but it does give an opportunity for a department before they post a job. The consultants should be working with you and saying, hey, we have this two pools. One is a layoff pool, one is a non-renewal pool. Hopefully people are going through those. You don't have to actually do a recruitment. You can look through them, do your own analysis, call people, talk to them. I always say do your due diligence, reference check, test, do those kinds of things. Don't assume because they're a 20-year employee that they have what they need to do your job. So make sure you vet that out. But we want to give people an opportunity who have given their years of service here, especially if you're a term-funded employee. It's a very difficult spot to be in because from year to year you're wondering, are you going to be continued? And then after 15 years, there's an expectation of being continued, and then budget cuts come and we have to let people go. And non-renewals, we lose a lot of good people, and so we want to be able to rehire those people into jobs. It's a benefit to the university if we can, because we have training issues that can be negated because we have somebody who does maybe have banner experience or just understands the university, which is really important. So we really want to encourage that. Take the time. I know there's going to be a few people in this pool by the end of next year, I'm assuming, and so take the time before you open the recruitment to really go out and look in that pool. Because I just had a recruitment for an assistant and had a lot of applicants in the pool. And so there's people out there applying for university jobs, but if we can hire somebody that already has years of service here and has dedicated their life to UAF, then let's take that leap and do that. But still do your due diligence and check and do reference checking and whatnot.
Hey, Brad, I have a quick question for you.
Do we still have to wait the 90 days if there's no recruitment put out?
The 90-day vacancy hold?
Yes.
If you, that is something I'm going to have to vet through. I think the 90-day hold's going away, but I'm not for sure on that. I'll have to check and get, is this Jessica?
It is.
Okay. I'll have to get back to the group on that. But I know there's going to be some changes to the 90-day hold. And definitely if you hire out of the non-renewal pool or the layoff pool, you either get the 45 days charge only or you're not going to get charged at all. So I need to vet that through. And I'll get back to Brad on that.
That would be great. Thank you.
This is Lawrence. Could you distinguish those two pools again and exactly why is there a difference?
The reason why there's already a layoff pool for laid off employees, and so with the non-renewals, I just wanted to create a new pool because we can't, UAK Jobs is not sophisticated enough to say, these are laid off folks, these are non-renewal folks. What it is here's 45 people in the pool. And so what I'm trying to do is just make it more, I'm just making it easier for people to go in there rather than if you're looking for a non or if you're looking for a faculty member, you don't want to search through 40 staff members to find the faculty member. So that's why we want to break them out into separate pools. But you're going to get access to the pool when you ask. If you say, I want access to the non-renewal and the layoff pool, we're going to give you access to both pools. But it was just to reduce the number of, you know, people get overwhelmed when they see lists of applications, and sometimes it's like sticker shock. You walk away from it saying, I don't even want to look at that. If it's less people, people will tend to look at it. It's all mind games. But that's why I created the two different pools. And there's different rights with rehiring a laid-off person versus a non-renewal person. So.
And so the you said that you can ask for access to the pool. Are we communicating that out to supervisors and hiring authorities?
We haven't yet because the policy isn't done. And once it's adopted, then we will communicate that out. The consultants should be working one-on-one. If there are, I don't know if we have anybody in our layoff pool currently. We've been very successful. We and the applicant's been very successful at regaining employment, whether it's in the university or outside the university. So pretty successful in that arena. But I'm assuming in the next several months to 3 years that it's going to be more prevalent with the budget cuts and things like that. So it's something we need to get ahead of instead of waiting until it's in our face.
Brad, do you have a timeline on when you think that policy may be finished and in place?
Well, it's supposed to be done like a month ago.
Yeah, that's all I'm asking.
It's actually going pretty quickly. I have the final version, and I just need to have it vetted through my supervisors. Once I do that, then I will be rolling it out and going through the normal, going through cabinet and all that to get it approved. But I just am working on some small details, but it should be very – I'm assuming by the end of the fiscal year.
Okay.
Definitely.
That's kind of what I'm concerned about is July 1st, there may be – people
there's going to be a lot of people from now until July 1st. Not a lot of people, but there will be some people that are going to be in that pool. So we're going to have the pool open. We'll start communicating it by July 1st. I want to have workplace bullying training out there mandatory. And then also we want to push this term-funded non-renewal layoff pool. So those
cool.
are the two things.
Thank you.
And I will comment, too, that reduced waiting seems very positive to everybody. That would be a great incentive to go to that list. Is that 90 days is less.
Yeah, the charge
less
is
are gone.
Yeah, the charge is less. It's only half of the 90 days. But I think if you hire out of these pools, and I'm going to talk to the chancellor, is that going to waive that that 90 45 day hold? Because we want to reemploy our employees. I think
my point was that wave or some reduction. So if they don't want to go for the whole wave, some reduction.
Yeah. No. There has to be some reduction in staff. There has to be some reduction at the university because we're not getting the money. So however we figure out to do that, and that's why we're trying to do some of that through attrition when people leave, which causes, you know, other issues for people, and that's why workplace bullying is so important because as you do more and take on more, people start to get upset and behaviors start to change. And bullying behavior starts to come out. And so this is all a package deal when you're going through these kinds of things.
Are there other questions for Brad on term-funded employees? Actually, I have a question. We had talked on the phone about a number of term-funded employees. Something staff council is curious to, you know, how many term-funded employees do we have, and where do they work? Like, so we assume they're in research units. But.
Yeah, we're still working on the
okay.
data. I asked Jennifer to pull that, and I'll send that to you along with the other from Jessica's question.
All right. Any other questions on term-funded employees? David?
One of the core problems with term-funded employees is there are people who are non-renewed, not because of lack of funding, not because of any apparent reason, just manager's discretion, I suppose. This ends up being, this could potentially be used as a loophole to remove employees for essentially arbitrary reasons. Is there any way to do you see that problem? Is there a way to address it?
Well, you're always going to, even in the layoff pool, if you look at the layoff regs, you can lay people off on certain criteria, and one is using past performance. And so when we put them in a layoff pool, there are stellar employees in that pool, and then there's not so stellar employees. But what we want to do is, rather than define who's stellar and who's not, is say they're in a pool. Please do your due diligence, check references. If they're a university employee, call their supervisors and make sure that you get, you know, a viable applicant. Because you're going to find that no matter where you go. If you open a pool, open a recruitment to Fairbanks, you're going to get people that are not so stellar, and you're going to get people that are stellar. And so really, without me going in there and saying, oh, this is a bad person, because I really don't know. Because non-renewals are strictly, it's a term-funded job till this date, and then it ends. And so that's how we're treating those. So if it's egregious performance and behavior issues, we're not non-renewing them. We're going down another path.
I think if
Brad,
go ahead, Faye.
Maybe the concern was more that for issues more like retaliation, do term-funded employees who are non-retained, if they believe it is a retaliatory gesture, or if they were non-retained for not performance or not funding issues, if they have, you know, what kind of recourse do they have?
Well, the term funded employee, since they are on a contract to a specific date, they really, I mean, they can file a complaint, they can file a grievance and say that I was non-renewed based on X, Y, and Z. They'd have to prove that as well. But to answer, those are two totally different questions. So your question is, I would come and talk to HR about that if you feel like you're being non-renewed for some non-performance behavior issue, budget issue. But if it's performance and behavior, you can be non-renewed. But if it's very egregious, the university is going to take different action. So if you feel like, in any instance, if you feel like you're being retaliated against, you can always go to either May or I for help.
Thanks.
Other questions on term funded employees? I had a, oh no, it just escaped my brain. That's right, I'm sorry. I wanted to touch on the weather days. I understand that was a policy suggestion that came from UAFHR. I know that, or the last I heard, it's at system-wide, so we don't know exactly what that's going to look like, but do you have any information you could share on that?
Well, we're kind of in discussions with statewide on whether we're going to give weather days or let people use like their sick leave or just give people like three loaded weather days at the beginning of the year. It's a very touchy subject, weather, because we live in Alaska and we're a residential campus, so we can't just close down. I mean, there's all these nuances that prevent us from actually closing down and not having. So I had two employees who live in North Pole. One couldn't make it, one could. So what do I do? Me as a supervisor, I work with the person to say, can you work from home? Can you do these trainings? Can you do that? But right now we don't have any kind of stance on what we're going to do moving forward, because me and Eric are in conversations about, is it going to be sick leave? Is it going to be a special bank of, but where's the money going to come from? And that's the biggest question, is where's the money going to come from to pay people for weather days?
And that's related because employees on restricted funds, those funds don't pay for administrative leave days. That's the money concern. Is that correct?
Yes. Yeah. So that's still a topic that's in the air. But I know Pat Pitney is the one that started that ball rolling forward just from last winter, this previous winter with all the weather days and issues that we had with weather. So I'm assuming it's going to get worse.
Kind of related to that topic, and I don't know if you were here earlier when Yurko and I talked about this or commented on this. We work in Unit 15 OIT. OIT is statewide and UAF. It has employees in both places. I've taken bullying awareness training statewide because I work for a statewide department. However, I'm a UAF employee. That brings up all kinds of issues because do I now have to take bullying awareness training with UAF? I've already taken it. And there's more to that. When statewide says you're getting administrative leave and UAF says, I'm sorry, we can't afford that, while I understand that from a financial perspective, I work in a department where four people are paid by statewide, two people are paid by UAF. Does that mean two people get off at administrative leave, the other two don't? In the same group, in the same room, same department. Weather days, statewide says stay home, don't come to work. UAF says, no, if you can come to work, you should try, and if not, then see if you can make other arrangements. This has implications on pretty much anything HR related. I'd like to hear your thoughts on that and see if there's anything that your office can agree with on statewide somewhere.
Well, this has been something that's been going on since I've been in HR for 8 years. I mean, every year I hear about OIT and UAF for Staff Appreciation Day. So the latest was statewide to Staff Appreciation Day, but they can't eat our food. So next year, and I'm just going to tell you, this frustrates me more than anything, is our structural problems in the university where we can't get a guidance on this. So, and I will say that the president gave statewide an extra day of admin leave, and the chancellor said, we cannot do that, folks. 200,000 versus, 3 million. We can't do that. We just cannot do that. And so what we agreed to do is, one thing we agreed to do was for next year, we need to coordinate with statewide. And so why don't we have one day? And they can pay for the portion of food that they eat. But why can't we involve everybody? We're one real university. We should be anyway. And so my goal for next year is to try to just say, let's stop segregating things and just come together as one group. Now, that's because I'm a fluffy HR person, and I think bringing people together is a great thing. I don't know how much resistance I'm going to get from that, but I also want to work on the structure. Either everybody needs to be statewide or everybody needs to be UAF because it does cause a lot of problems. Every year I go through this. On the reporting and where, if you have already attended bullying training, you do not need to attend it again. That's to answer your first question, because we don't need to be redundant. It's right. The same information. It's just people delivering it different. So don't attend it again unless you want to. But it is a topic that is on my brain, and it comes up about every May, and so it relives itself. But it's something that needs to be addressed with leadership because it causes a lot of problems. So
thank you.
I know that's not a good answer, but it's something I'll have to work on. And, again, it's a frustration for a lot of people.
Brad, can you talk to them? Can you talk to their statewide risk management and UAF health and safety to have them combine?
Okay.
On the training specifically.
Yeah.
On the
required trainings.
Okay.
That was a related issue from earlier.
Do they have different trainings than our risk management?
Uh-huh.
Mm-hmm. We get to do both right now.
The most well-trained, most well-trained people at the university.
Right.
So, yes, I will bring that up, and I'll email Brad and Ashley so you guys can forward it out to everybody.
Okay.
Such as supervisory training, I know statewide employees come to supervisory training as well, and we welcome that. So,
I had one last it's kind of a fluff question, but last year I was talking to you or asking about work from home telecommuting, and I wasn't being very clear in exactly what we're talking about, whether we're talking about out of state, long-term in-state or short-term. And I was really trying to ask about short-term in-state. And so I wanted to clarify, you know, if there's a weather emergency, non-exempt employees, it would be appropriate for, if a supervisor is willing, if it works out, to say you could take some training. If you've got an internet connection at home, I can follow up on that. That's something that could be allowed in the event of a weather emergency.
Absolutely.
Okay.
And I encourage it to have people do trainings while they're home, because there's lots of Skillsoft trainings they can take, and it's something you can, they can print them out, and it shows how long they were online, and it's trackable. But also, if it's not something that's trackable and you trust your employee, let them do it from home. You want to get the most out of people. We also want people to use their leave, though, too, so that's another important thing, is to balance that. And that's what I'll tell people sometimes is, look, you know, for 4 hours today, work on your training, and then take the rest of the day off, because I can't provide you any other work to do. But I do have 4 hours of training you can do. So you want to try to work with your – I mean, I want to be family-friendly, and I want to be flexible, and I think I'm pretty flexible in my own department. Some supervisors are not flexible, and some people are way flexible. Well, we just need to have some kind of common ground here, because we don't want everybody working from home, because there's risk management issues that are associated with that, and also productivity and whatnot. But some people can pull it off and work from home and be very productive. But it's you as a supervisor should know your people better than me or anybody else, and know that I can trust this person to work from home today. I can trust them that they're going to do this training. Especially if it's somebody that's had a life event and they're out of leave, hopefully you're working with them on that. But it's now that summer's here, you know, we're going to forget about the weather. Unless we have hot days, which UAA last summer had a hot day. They left early because it was so hot. We probably won't have that, but we will be working over the summer on weather days, because this next winter we're going to have it again. It's going to happen, so we need to be prepared for it.
Yeah, I think you can count that you'll hear from staff council in September or August about the topic of weather days, because we look to, you know, October, November will be upon us for
– Yep. You know, absolutely.
Possibly other, I mean, hopefully not, but other ice incidents or rain incidents.
And it's not just UAF, it's statewide that needs to be, we all have to be on the same page when it comes to this. So.
Yeah, and I, just personally, I think some kind of weather day option, I mean, I recognize what you're saying, and that we are a residential campus, there are some things we can't close down, but having some kind of option so that employees can make safe choices without having to feel that they're jeopardizing, you know, their future leave. You know, maybe they had a vacation plan. Maybe they just really are protective of their leave. But so that employees don't go, well, is 4 hours worth of leave worth driving? Sure. I don't, you know, I think in a lot of circumstances that's not something we want people to be doing. We'd rather them be safe. So I think some kind of option where we can enable that is really critical for this university.
One thing we talked about a month or two ago, or early in the spring, I suppose, was, you know, what can be done, you know, like you were talking ahead of time, but within departments specifically, identifying before a weather event who's considered an essential employee to be there, so that the campus doesn't close, and then what identifying in advance as well what the work from home options are in event of a weather day, because when it happens, you know, the communication is always kind of confusing and jumbled up that morning, and it's hard for people to make a decision on the fly, not knowing, is it okay with my supervisor if I do these trainings from home today? Well, I'll write to them now, but maybe they won't check their mail for 2 hours. You know, there's kind of that confusion, but if things could be spelled out in advance, like a departmental plan, I think that would help people's judgment a lot.
And last winter, we had a few days where we knew it was going to be bad. So like the night before, we almost knew, the school district almost knew they were going to be closing. And so what I did was I walked around the department at 4:30 and said, okay, it's probably going to be a weather day tomorrow. So, take work home with you. I mean, I was more proactive. Now, if it happens in the morning, I can't, you know, say, come on in and get your work and go back home. Last winter we knew pretty much the next day was going to be pretty bad. And so where you can plan for that and give people the work and tell them, take this home. You know, you have to be careful what you give people. And, I mean, we don't want to give people Social Security number forms to take home and sit there with their family and enter stuff into the banner. But you have to be cognizant of what we're giving people. But we need to work with people. We have a very generous leave policy as well. And I keep going back to our leave policy because it's generous. And so people have to manage their leave. But when you're not able to come to work because of an unforeseen incident, the university's got to figure out what to do with that. So,
one other comment about what you had said is that I remember last November that there was a lot of, that was suggested, and there was a lot of resistance to coming up with anything in writing about who's essential and who's not.
Yeah, that was a comment that came back from Chancellor Rogers that, well, if I had a list of essential employees and the legislature said, oh, well, who's essential, he wouldn't want to be able to say, oh, sure, I know exactly who I could do without.
Yeah, I guess, essential on an everyday basis.
Right, right. I mean, it seems reasonable if you say there are some functions we don't have to do every day. But, yeah, because even then you say that, it's like, well, why aren't they part-time? Well, related to one of Faye's suggestions, one thing that I think it was discussed last year, I think statewide said they were going to do it and then didn't, but a delayed start. You know, I think on one of the weather days we had, one of the bad Fairbanks weather days, the weather at 10 a.m., was much better than the weather at 7 a.m. or 8 a.m. And, you know, maybe it would be possible to have employees come into work or plan to get a response from UA, from UAF by, say, 9:30, and then they could consider whether or not they're coming in or not. And, you know, that might help, you know, plan for a closure in the morning.
And you said that was brought up last year.
I want to say statewide said they were going to do it, but then didn't, and then closed. Okay.
Yep. It was suggested.
Because that's actually a really good idea because a lot of people actually for those days came in, but it wasn't until about noon because they wanted it to be light.
Yeah.
It's easier to drive when it's light out and things like that. Or their driveway was better, or, you know, they got help. So that's a good suggestion.
Yeah, I mean, that's something that can go along with UAF alert messaging or, you know, general public messaging. You know, the University of Alaska Fairbanks is plans to be open today. Please expect that some offices may not be open until 10 o'clock or 11 o'clock as employees can safely make it in.
Okay.
Are there other questions for Brad? I know we've kept you a little longer, but I really appreciate the time.
I'll just send you a bill. Another question?
Sure.
This is related to the term funding thing. Do you happen to know what if there are any constraints on designating a position as a term position in the first place? I mean, there are clearly a lot of term positions that are where the underlying task is certainly not a term task, and the term contracts frequently don't align with the funding periods either. So, is there any constraint
that's
on
something we're
designating
looking at.
Something in it as a term funding position in the first place?
Yeah, that's something we're looking at. A term funded position is supposed to be for a set term, or we don't know if we're going to have hard funding for this moving forward. We don't know if this position is going to be needed in 2 years. So there are some caveats, and it's usually around funding. Grant funds are usually term-funded position, obviously. But there are some positions on campus that are regular positions that are term positions, and we're fixing those. I don't know how it happened, administrative error or whatever, but they were set up wrong, and so we're looking at those. But we don't want to pull the rug out from under people in a time where there's a lot of crises going on and saying, oh, now your term. But we're going to better define, and that's been a question from actually people on campus about what is a term-funded employee, and what if I want to hire one, what is the rules for that? Do they have to be grant-funded? In HR, we have a term-funded position because I don't have hard funding for it. It's one that every year I have to look on to see if I can continue it. It's not paid on funding, but I don't have the hard funding for it. And so it's kind of a catch-22 there with the term-funded. But there is no guidelines or rules out there right now on what is term-funded and how do you hire them. So
is that should be strictly grant, more grant-funded is term-funded people.
And is that, so are guidelines about that something we should be seeing in the next few months along with the term funded policy? Or is that
possibly, okay. But I'm not going to overcommit myself for the summer because I'm going to have a summer this year.
But we should expect, if
next,
I understand
yes,
you correctly,
maybe next
that,
year, yes, you can expect that, but not this summer.
Right. Well, I guess my question is, am I correct then in understanding you're saying that where we have term funded employees who are doing permanent work, ongoing work, they should be permanent employees.
Yes, and we have also the flip-flop of that, too. We have term fund employees who are on two PCNs who are actually term funded, and they are going to be flip-flopped.
Okay.
So there's going to be some flip-flopping of those positions.
I have a comment on that. I know at our campus we have a lot of term funded positions that are necessary positions and probably should be on fund one. However, the idea is that if the grant funding goes away, then the workload is much smaller, in which case those positions are no longer needed.
Mm-hmm.
So I just thought I'd make that comment.
Thanks, Selena. Are there any other questions for Brad on this or any other HR topics? Any questions online? Okay, I don't hear any. Thank you so much for coming to our staff council meeting.
And staff appreciation day tomorrow. Please encourage people to go and be present and be involved. So, and we appreciate that.
Thank you.
Thanks.
So next on our agenda are officer elections. Richard, am I turning the mic over to you, or who's emceeing this here? I'm going to turn the mic over to you.
Sure.
Take it away.
There are only two candidates that I know of right now, but unless there are any nominations from the floor. Want to nominate Brad?
I will say in advance that due to time constraints for the next year, I will decline the nomination.
Okay. At this point, I'd like to give the two candidates an opportunity to say something. Start off with Chris, nominated for president.
Sure. Chris Bex, Unit 15 OIT. Been on staff council for about 18 months now. And initially just came here to figure out and find out how I could kind of contribute in governance. I didn't really have a very good idea. After 18 months, I have a very good idea now. And in especially the last couple of months in working with Planning and Budget Committee, really got a good understanding of some of the challenges that this institution faces and what that means for staff and being able to represent staff council and staff as a whole really feels like something I'd like to do. And I would like to continue doing that and maybe contribute a little more. And I think I can do that by running for office. And so, that's about all.
Then the other nominee is Faye Gallant for vice president.
So I just say that I'm willing and honored to be nominated. I think I also, so I'm in administrative services or the VCAS unit right now as a representative. Due to the nature of my job, I think I have a very institutional-wide perspective on things. The issues I encounter in my day-to-day work are ones that touch pretty much everyone who works for UAF. So I think that I would be able to take a perspective on things that does include all units. And I really like to get things done and to move things forward. That's the other part of my day-to-day job that works. So I think staff council has done a lot of great things. I've just in the short time I've been a representative, I've seen a lot of good stuff come out of it, and I'd like to be helpful in moving those things forward and new initiatives as well. So, thanks.
Okay, now, and for the people in this room, we're going to just do a paper ballot. And for those online, can you please email Nicole with your choice?
You guys have so much to choose from.
And then I guess we'll be taking a break during this extensive vote counting.
And Richard, should we mention write-in nomination? Write-in votes are possible.
What Brad said.
Do I need two separate
pieces of paper or can I have one?
You want a pencil?
I would like to have something
slightly. So am I clear that you're running for president and you're running for vice president, right? Okay.
Yes.
All right.
There's not a big cut.
Right, right.
No,
we're just going through the motions. Okay.
So Marie's been cut. Marie. I know Marie.
No, well, she's different.
Completely different. There you go. Robert's rule.
Do you want to give them? I guess your email address should be on. You know, you can reply to the agenda email that was sent out yesterday. But it's also. Do you want to give your full email address? And Nicole's email address, just for those online, it's NM Dufour. That's Nicole Marie Dufour, D-U-F-O-U-R, at alaska.edu.
And spelling does not need to be exact.
Just get those bracelets, the Murkowski bracelets.
Online vote for quorum. And we're good.
I don't know.
Sorry.
We could do it and then put it out via email.
All right. Well, go ahead and call this meeting back to order at 10:34. And I have the results of the elections in front of me for the crinkling bag. Dan, I'm staring at you for next year for. For 2014-2015, Staff Council President will be Chris Bex. Congratulations. And for 2014-2015 Vice President, Faye Gallant. Congratulations. And we have a motion 250-2. So do you have we have it written here in paper, but can I get a motion from someone on the floor to introduce it?
Sure.
Richard? So all right. Do we have a second?
Seconded.
Okay. Any opposition to passing a motion to ratify our officer elections? Yeah, we should do it as a roll call vote. I'm sorry. I'll go ahead and do a roll call when Nicole's ready.
Adam Kane, Sherry Rolfs, Leslie Walls, Jamie Warwick, Jessica DeRochers, Debbie Coxon, Jesse Atencio.
Yes.
Lawrence Murakami.
Affirmed.
Rolf, confirmed.
Was that Sherry?
Yes.
Janine Smith?
Yes.
Jan Christensen?
Yes.
Kim Eames? Juan Gula?
Yes. Something to eat.
Jeff Baxter?
Yes.
Trish Winters?
Bagelant? I just wanted to note under the rationale that it says the Elections Membership and Rules Committee has reviewed and certified.
We'll,
so if we
we'll
just want to say
we'll
the Elections.
Edit that and change it to Elections. Good catch. Good catch.
Thank you.
And so, yeah, with that edit, yes.
I used last year's motion. I forgot to like to change in the meantime. Jessica McCallum?
Yes.
Jeanette Altman? Dave?
Yes, and for Jeanette.
Okay. Nate Bauer? Richard Machida?
Yes.
Jorko Toivonen?
Yes.
Chris Beggs?
Yes.
Evelyn Pinsgaard? Selena Brown?
Yes.
Tom Langdon?
Cindy Collins?
Tony Abbey?
Chris. Can we hit Chris Jorko and... Oh. I just misheard them.
So it's unanimous.
Okay. Do we have enough to make a call? Do we still have quorum, I guess? Awesome. By how many?
One
person. So we... have a unanimous yes to ratify our elections. Congratulations again to Chris and Faye. Dane, I hate to put you on the spot, but if you hadn't been here voting for Jeanette, being here as her proxy, I think we would have lost quorum, or we would have just been barely on the edge if we'd lost one other person. So thank you for being here. To everyone else, remember, if you can't make a meeting, please send a proxy. I'm going to put that out in email, because I think the people who are here and the people who are online are those of us who are normally here. So we'll send out that message to everyone. Or maybe make a note to send it out before, make a note to the incoming leadership that they remind everyone before our August meeting. So we'll go ahead and move on to new business. We've got motion 250-1, which is the motion to cancel our June 2014 meeting and to transfer the authority to make decisions for staff council to the executive board for the summer.
Moved.
All right, so we have a motion. We have a second. Okay. So moving a second. Any discussion on this item? I'll take a audible roll call. All in favor, please say aye.
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 Any opposed? Any abstentions? Okay. Motion carries. The June staff council meeting is canceled, and the if there's any staff council business that comes up over the summer, the executive board will be authorized to handle it. If necessary, they can call another staff council meeting if there's something that comes up that we do need to meet for. So we'll go ahead and move to item B under new business, a motion to amend UAF staff council bylaws to remove duplicate duties from MNR. And this came to us from MNR, right? So I think it just needs a second. All right, we have a second. Chris, do you want to speak to this motion at all? What does it do?
I'm getting there.
Okay.
so really, there's two motions that MNR put forward, and they're really for updating language in the bylaws. In a previous staff council meeting, we changed from alternates to at-large seats, and there's just a little bit of language left in the bylaws. that has at-large seats and or has alternates in there instead of at-large seats, and so this is really to update that.
Well, the further
This is the other motion. Sorry. So this motion, at about the same time we changed the at-large seats to alternates to at-large seats, we also split the responsibilities. It used to be elections, membership, and rules. Now it's elections. That's Richard, and membership and rules, which is me, for chair. And there are in the bylaws, membership and rules still has responsibilities listed that should go to elections. And so we're just, this motion strikes those responsibilities out from under the responsibilities of membership and rules since they're already listed under elections.
All right. Thanks, Chris. So we've got a motion, a second. Any discussion? Chris, is it kosher to just do a I vote, or do we need a roll call vote for bylaws?
I think we need a roll call vote.
Okay.
For bylaws.
Well, so when you're ready, Nicole.
Adam Kane. Sherry Rolfs.
Aye.
Leslie Walls, Jamie Warwick, Jessica DeRochers, Debbie Coxon,
yes.
Jesse Atencio,
yes.
Lawrence Murakami,
aye.
Janine Smith,
yes.
Jan Christensen,
yes.
Kim Eaton. Juan Gula?
Yes.
Jeff Baxter?
Yes.
Trish Winters?
Aye.
Faye Gallant?
Yes.
Jessica McCallum?
Yes.
Dane?
Yes.
Nate Bauer? Richard Machida?
Yes.
Jorko Toivonen?
Yes.
Chris Bex?
Yes.
Evelyn Pinsgaard? Selena Brown?
Yes.
Tom Langdon? Cindy Collins? Tony Abbey? Sixteen-4-0 against?
Motion passes. Next up is staff council motion 250-4. Chris, do you want to discuss that one?
Yeah, kind of, and that's what I explained for the first one. It just updates the language in the bylaws to change alternates to at-large seats. We believe we found all the alternates mentioned and changed them to at-large seats, and that's what this bylaw changes that the entity is asking for.
So put forth through membership and rules. Do we have a second?
Seconded.
Seconded. And Nicole, can we do a roll call vote or any discussion? Okay. Nicole, roll call vote.
Adam Kane. Jerry Rolfs.
Yes.
Leslie Walls. Jamie Warwick. Jessica DeRochers. Debbie Coxon?
Yes.
Jesse Atencio?
Yes.
Lawrence Murakami?
Affirmative.
Janine Smith?
Yes.
Jan Christensen?
Yes.
Kim Eaton? Juan Gula?
Yes.
Jeff Baxter?
Yes.
Trish Winters?
Yes.
Faye Gallant?
Yes.
Jessica McCallum?
Yes.
Jeanette Altman?
Yeah.
Oh, thank you. Nate Bauer?
There you go.
Richard Machida?
Yes.
Jorko Toivonen?
Yes.
Chris Beck?
Yes.
Evelyn Pinsgord? Selena Brown?
Yes.
Tom Langdon? Cindy Collins? Tony Abbey?
Okay.
16-4-0 against.
All right, so that motion passes unanimously. So we'll go ahead and move to, are we on item D? Thank you. Item D, a resolution of appreciation for Brad Crick, which is attachment 250-12.
The resolution of recognition and appreciation of Brad, nicely framed, and it says, whereas Brad Crick served as president of the University of Alaska Fairbanks Staff Council from June 13 to May 2014, and whereas Brad Crick served on UA Staff Alliance and chaired the Staff Alliance Compensation Working Group August 2013 through May 2014, and whereas Brad Crick served as chair of the Staff Council Rural Affairs Committee from 2011 through 2013, and whereas Brad put his whole heart to serving UAF staff, and whereas Brad consistently supported the work of the committees by providing both guidance and legwork, and whereas Brad responded promptly and communicated widely about issues as they arose, and whereas Brad contributed daily to improving circumstances and the overall environment for UAF staff, and whereas Brad Crick has welcomed and mentored new Staff Council members, now, therefore, be it resolved that UAF Staff Council extends its recognition, appreciation, and gratitude to Brad Crick for his dedication to UAF staff and UAF Staff Council.
Yes.
Do we have a second?
Second.
Oh, yes. I'll not make Brad call for a vote. All in favor, please say aye.
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 Any opposed? All right, motion or resolution passes.
Thank you, everyone. And thank you especially to Ashley and to Nicole and to the committee chairs, because it takes a lot of people to make this work. So we'll go ahead and move to item E, which is the addition of, I'm going to get the title wrong because I just scrolled it, addition of, I can't even read my own writing. This is the resolution introduced by Faye via email after the agenda yesterday.
So this is the bereavement?
Yes. The resolution proposing addition of language to UA Regulation 0406-130, sick leave, for the purpose of allowing sick leave donation for bereavement.
So the background on this, it came out of the leave share subcommittee, where an employee who had been taking care of a loved one and was on family medical leave, the loved one passed away, and she'd already gone through all her leave and then had to deal with the funeral and bereavement in general and was no longer eligible for the leave share program at that time. And we want to make sure that when employees are having these major events and are in a time of need, that that the leave share program can cover people during bereavement. And would you like me to read the resolution?
Yes, please. Let's go ahead and do that.
Whereas the University of Alaska is currently reviewing UA policy and regulation, and whereas UA Regulation 04-06-130 06130 currently allows an employee to take sick leave up to 5 consecutive workdays to arrange or attend the funeral of a member of the employee's immediate family. And whereas an employee who has taken care of an ailing family member may have exhausted their available leave balances. And whereas bereavement leave is not covered under UA's leave share program. And whereas an IRS letter ruling 200720017, the IRS allowed an employer's leave program to cover leave donation for extended time off following the death of a parent, spouse, or child without a tax obligation to the donor. Therefore, let it be resolved, the UAF Staff Council proposes the following addition to R0406130 Sick Leave Section C in order to allow for leave donation for bereavement. Therefore, be it further resolved, a new donation program to be established to allow employees to request leave to cover bereavement. And you can sort of see in the highlighted changes down below, it's the last sentence of Section B. If an employee's sick leave balance is not sufficient, they may receive up to 5 days of donated sick leave.
Thank you, Faye. Do we have a second for this motion or resolution? Pardon. And I'd just like to take a moment to speak to a couple things on the resolution. Attached the IRS letter ruling. I didn't actually get that attached to the resolution, but I do have it, and we can attach it to the item following. But I wanted to sort of talk a little bit about that. It was a ruling requested by an employer. Basically, it's in lawyer, and I'm not a lawyer. So my hope is that it's something that eventually general counsel will review and be able to say if it's exactly what I think it says. But basically, an employer asked the IRS if their leave donation program was acceptable. And to back up a little more, Erica kind of indicated this at our March meeting. Basically, in order to donate leave without a tax obligation to the donor, in other words, to donate it without having to claim it as compensation and thus pay taxes on it, it has to be donated under certain circumstances. So that's why our sick leave donation works the way it does, because one of the allowed circumstances is a medical emergency. So in this letter ruling, this employer said that their leave donation program also covers some extended time off for, following the death of a parent, spouse, or child. And the IRS said in this letter of this program that this was acceptable and did not cause an obligation to the donor. So that's the justification for adding this. It appears that as far as the IRS is concerned, you could donate paid leave to an employee for the purpose of time off following the death of a family member. And then we'll get that attached to the resolution as it goes up. So any other questions or comments on the resolution?
I might add that it's also significant in that a new employee who has not accrued any leave would be entitled to receive this donation. So it really plays a critical part for all employees.
I'm just curious real quick, if parent means, if for instance, if you're married, does that mean spouse's parents or your parents?
Correct.
I don't know. And we're asking this to be somewhat separate from our current leave share, because our current leave share program is based on basically if you qualify for FML. But currently, if it's a medical emergency for your spouse's parent, can you take FML and go on leave share for that? Yes? Okay. So I would assume then the answer is yes, but I don't know that with certainty. Cool. And one other thing I noted in the distribution, Dana Plata, who is an OIT employee and is on the statewide administration assembly, she is one of the SAA sort of split up some of the review for policy and regulation, and she's specifically assigned for this section, Chapter 406. So that's why I included her on the distribution on this. All right, are there any other questions or comments, or are we ready to go to a vote? Okay, seeing none. Any questions or comments from online? All right, seeing and hearing none, I'll go ahead and call for a all in favor, please say aye.
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 Any opposed? Any abstentions? All right, resolution passes unanimously. And we'll go ahead and move on to item F on a new business, which is a resolution concerning leave share for those on intermittent FML. And this was distributed by Jeff at the beginning of the meeting. Well, Jeff, would you like to read your resolution?
Sure. This concerns leave share for those on intermittent FML. Whereas the University of Alaska is reviewing regulations, including those affecting the leave share program, and whereas under the proposed changes, there is a consecutive 10-day requirement to qualify for the leave share program, and whereas personnel on intermittent FML may not be absent for 10 consecutive days, yet still exhaust all available sick and annual leave balances, and whereas IRS letter 2007-20017 allowed a program with leave donation for medical emergency, quote, including intermittent absences that are related to the same illness or condition, end quote. Now, therefore, let it be resolved. The UAF Staff Council proposes that the University Regulation Part 4, Human Resources, Chapter 0406, Benefits and Leave, paragraph R406-130, Sick Leave, subparagraph D, Leave Share Program, strike the word consecutive from the 10-day requirement to qualify for the Leave Share Program. And I might amend that as...
So just really quick, I know you have some amendments or some possible amendments. Do we have a... we've had Jeff's motion. Do we have a second?
Second.
All right. Now, Jeff, go ahead.
Sorry about that. If before the final period at the bottom, if you'd add a parenthetical statement that says, as noted in the attached.
And then the attached would be...
The attached your, is what follows.
The documents following that both describe the changes and then illustrate the changes using...
Correct.
Using the current proposed Board of Regents policy and reg changes. All right, so we have a motion to amend. Is there a second?
A second.
All right, we have a motion and a second. Any discussion on this amendment? Okay, I'll call for a all those in favor, please say, all those in favor of the amendment, please say aye.
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 Any opposed? And any abstentions? Okay, the resolution is amended. Other questions, comments, amendments for this resolution?
Speaking to the resolution for a moment, that first page that's attached kind of gives a summary of the justification for this change. It is rather significant. Brad referenced, or someone referenced, an employee who, after they were on FML for a season, the spouse passed away, and they were no longer on FML, and therefore no longer eligible to participate in the leave share program. This particular employee happened to be on intermittent FML, and during a 25-day period, they were not able to be at work for 17 of those days. They were in a leave without pay status for 17 of those days, but no 10 consecutive days were they absent. So because they were local and were able to come into work periodically, they were not eligible to participate in the leave share program. So they lost quite a sum of money when there were other staff members, faculty members, who were willing to donate their sick leave. to this individual.
Could I just add in there, Jeff, too, that we also noted in our discussion that the policy as written without allowing for intermittent basically tells employees to keep away if they're it penalizes employees for coming in when they can, even if it's only a day out of 19. And so we want to make sure that employees who are trying to do their best to get in, even if it's only for a brief period to check in on things, aren't being penalized for attempting to be good employees during a time of crisis.
Yeah, one of the things that Jennifer said was, as a consultant, they don't encourage, she doesn't encourage employees do that. Don't take intermittent FML for exactly this reason, which was interesting, because then obviously that is not something that's being shared, not a view that's being shared by everyone.
But no, that's fine. It puts a huge compromise into the system. I would have actually had to tell my employee, stay away during this time. You've been authorized intermittent FML, but I'm telling you to step on those rules of intermittent FML, using them only when you need to, using that time only when you need to, and stay away from work. And if you stay away from work long enough, then we'll get you some leave share. So, and I just wanted to note as well, it's already mentioned in the resolution, but it specifically states that in that IRS letter that intermittent leave is eligible for this. So,
yeah. And I suggest similarly to the previous resolution, we should attach the full copy of that IRS letter to this, and not just a link.
And I'm done.
And then for distribution, would the same distribution as a previous resolution be acceptable?
I would think that would be most appropriate.
So it'll be sent directly to... Thank you so much, Nicole. Sent directly to Staff Alliance, Dana Plata, Eric Van Flyen, and Eric Seasted, and then we'll copy the Chancellor and President Campbell. I guess I should say, is that acceptable to the group?
Yeah.
All right.
Brad, on that, what's marked page 17, do you have that copy? There are some other names there in that paragraph D that are highlighted in gray. I don't know if you want to include those or if you have.
I think so. M. Hostina and A. Lynch are both with General Counsel. I suspect my expectation is that both of these resolutions, well, Ashley and I will take them to Staff Alliance. My expectation is that Staff Alliance will take a look at them. I hope, I will encourage that they approve them. And then I expect that they would go to General Counsel. So I don't think we need to CC them on this, because I think that's where it's going to end up. All right, any other questions, comments, amendments for this resolution? Okay, seeing none, I will go ahead and take a, I cannot find a way to phrase that, an audible vote? That's not right. All those in favor of passing this resolution as amended, please say aye.
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 Any opposed? And any abstentions? All right, the resolution passes unanimously. And I just want to thank Jeff and Staff Affairs, and also Jennifer Youngberg, who's not here, but was a contact for us and sort of working over these things, for all your work on this. Thank you. Okay, so in the interest of time, I'm going to ask that for both our internal, external, and ad hoc committee reports that we just go through. If you have any comments, please feel free to share them, but if what's there is in the attachment, let's go with that. So, Richard?
I'm not sure why the attachment didn't make it in there, but the elections committee did meet, but the primary topic was the elections that we just had today.
Okay, so we'll get the attachment put on the website for longevity. Chris?
You saw the results from M&R's draft resolutions.
There are more changes to bylaws, but they need some further just detailing out, and expect to see those next or after the summer, I should say.
And is there anyone here for rural affairs? Okay, and I did not attend their most recent meeting. I believe there was more there was more conversation on the ombudsman proposal. Jeanette created a draft ombudsman proposal that exists on Google Drive right now.
And that was pretty much the only thing we discussed there.
Oh, okay. Yeah. Thanks, Chris. Faye?
So you should have received in your inbox the Better Place to Work questionnaire tool. If you could share that with your units, that would be excellent, and encourage them to submit ideas. You've just seen the output from the Leave Share subcommittee, those two resolutions, and Brad discussed early on the idea of a staff council sunshine fund for employees in need. I don't know if we want to get into that today, but if people have ideas on that, maybe you could contact me or anyone on the staff affairs committee through email. The staff affairs committee will be meeting in June, so we can follow up on that a bit more then if there's interest. And then we also confirmed the compensation increase and personal holiday, which you should have seen in your email as well. This applies just to FY15. This is not an ongoing forever additional personal holiday. But non-exempt staff will have two personal holidays, so one new one. Exempt staff will have a personal holiday as well, which is new. And they have no cash value and must be taken in FY15. So go ahead and use that. And then there's a 2% salary adjustment. And these are effective July 13th. So you see them in your August 8th paycheck.
And Heather from UAHR Compensation, Heather Arana, noted that it's not necessarily, they're not saying that an extra personal day might not continue. Or that they're saying it could continue, but it's not on the books right now. But they were open; they're open to ideas like that. So I just wanted to share that. She wanted to make it clear that it wasn't necessarily a hard cut, just this year, never again.
So I had a question about the personal day. Can you take it starting July 1 or July 13th?
You can take it starting July 13th, I believe, is when it's effective and shows up in your. In your leave balance. So unfortunately not over the July 4th holiday. and just on the Sunshine Fund really quickly, I know a lot of departments have this in place already. I used to work at the GI, which has a GI Cares Fund, which I think works very well. But that really leaves it up to what department you happen to be in, whether or not you have that available to you in a time of need. And so the thought with the staff council one would be that it distributed among a much broader group so that everyone had access regardless of where they sit.
Of course, just realizing just off the top of my head, we also open ourselves up to, well, staff council, we represent 1,400 employees. There are many more employees than that. So there'd be a lot of questions we'd have to figure out. Oh, and, you know, OIT employees and, it was a suggestion that I thought was a good one because it does solve or does answer some of those concerns, and it's something we could do if we don't get buy-in from the administration.
So yeah, just email me any thoughts on that, please. I'm sure my email is up on the website, or F for Faye, S like Sam, Gallant, GALLANT at alaska.edu.
All right, advocacy, is there anyone here for university advocacy? Okay. All right, we'll go ahead and go to external reports, staff healthcare committee.
I think I'm the only one here. We did meet on April the 24th, and we reviewed the third quarter utilization. Claims were down during the third quarter. And then we just pretty much discussed the wellness program and what that brings to the table as far as people getting their biometrics done by June the 30th and the discounts that you'll receive if you do your biometrics and have those all in. My understanding is Healthy Roads is a little bit behind posting those onto their website, and there's a notice on there as well. But what I did, I think it was maybe 2 weeks later, is that from Quest you get your biometrics back in the mail, so you do get some confirmation there. And at some point Healthy Roads will catch up. One of the things, as far as the wellness plan, too, we discussed in your workplace, you know, if you're doing catered events, look at having some healthier catered foods, have some walking meetings, outside meetings, just kind of create a bit healthier mode within your groups and, you know, when you're doing outside activities. Promote taking the stairs in your buildings when you can. If you're going to do any painting, possibly do some lighter color paints just to kind of bring calmness more to your area. That's pretty much it. I should have a full report from Melody later in the month.
Okay. I'm sorry, I had a question and it escaped my head.
Can I have a, you mentioned biometrics, and so we've been hearing a lot about the biometric screening that's happening tomorrow. When you signed up for Staff Appreciation Day, if you signed up for the biometric screening, that filled up really quickly, they did say that they are doing the testing on College Road. That is incorrect. They are doing it here in this building downstairs. So if you did get a time, you want to make sure that it said at UAF Staff Appreciation Day, it is here, not on College Road, but there are some people that also signed up to do biometric screenings at, which they thought were here, that are at their location on Airport Way. So just check your confirmation and make sure you know where you signed up and you go to the correct place because they are not taking walk-ins tomorrow.
All right, any other questions for SHCC? I remember mine. Is SHCC still taking suggestions for the guidelines to give to JHCC for the for next year's mileposts, what are they calling?
I don't remember.
Okay.
I don't know.
All right, we'll go ahead and move to the Compensation Working Group. We sent last year's proposals, resent the proposals to statewide, got a response from Tara, along with their consultation with President Gamble. That's attached. If you have any questions, please let me know. The one thing I wanted to highlight, because my intention is that we're going to continue following up on it, is geographic differential. They estimated a $6.4 million to match the state's GeoDiff. I started digging into that. Well, what if we excluded Fairbanks? What if we grandfather certain employees? And so we're continuing to follow up on that. It would be $4.6 million to give a 3% GeoDiff to Fairbanks. My suggestion would be that we not worry about that and we look at all of the other communities. But there is still something strange going on there where to grandfathering in all of our communities would cost $4.6 million, but not grandfathering them in would cost $1.7 million, which is a pretty big discrepancy, and I haven't quite figured out where that came from. So we're going to continue following up with Tara to see if we can find out exactly what data they're using, and that will determine, I think, what we want to propose. I think we may have to go community by community and say, we want this community to have this GeoDiff, this community to have this GeoDiff, this community to have this GeoDiff, and then have them tabulate it. But the President's response was that they would look at this and they'd consider asking for money, but noted that given the budget restrictions we're facing, that's not likely. So my hope is that if we can pare it down a little bit by excluding Fairbanks, we might have better luck. And I think there's a better argument for it. 3% is not so much compared to, you know, a 15 or 20% jump in cost of living, which other communities have seen. So we'll go ahead and move on to our external UAF committee reports. Does anyone want to say anything about any of those reports?
One thing about the Master Planning Committee has met twice since then. Again, I'm not sure why the attachments came over.
It got missed, but we'll get it added to the website.
That was my fault. I'm sorry.
But there was a reminder that the construction is starting again, and including the big hole next to Rooning when they replaced the HVAC equipment, as well as work on Wickersham and starting on the new traffic circle, another one by the new dining facility.
And that'll be where the delivery area used to be, or I guess maybe still is.
Still is.
Yeah. Right.
And there is, as well as obvious construction continuing on Duckering, there's also going to be a sewer project on Chandelier Drive, which is going to tear up that road.
as well as some work on Yukon Drive, which is going to tear up that road. So there's quite a bit of activity. So the most recent committee meeting was spent looking over all the proposals that were going to be shown at the, I guess, meeting on the 8th about the exterior designs for the new power plant. Well, one of the most notable changes compared to the previous preliminary designs that they had is that the stack is nowhere near as high as they originally said it was going to be. So I think a lot of people will be pleased with that one change. But if you didn't get a chance to look at the proposed exterior treatments of the building, I believe they said they were going to have them posted in Wood Center somewhere, but I didn't get the details about that because I didn't attend their May 8th meeting. That's it.
Okay. All right. So are there any other external UAF committee report comments?
I'll comment on my report. For Planning and Budget Committee, we are done ranking. I know Carrie earlier said that we're in the process of that. We're done with the ranking, and we are putting together the final report.
And
rating, not ranking. Yeah. So they're not put in an order. This is the do this one first, and then this one, and then this one. They're not in order. It's essentially grouped into recommended with reservations, and not recommended at all is the final breakdown.
Right. And my understanding from pre-staff is that this report will get shared out more broadly, actually maybe even from Faculty Senate, but will get shared out more broadly next week. Is there any mechanism for feedback from employees at large?
I'm not sure yet what the mechanism will be, but I believe that will be done through Cabinet. So it'll be posted, and then the current expectation is that there will be comment and feedback to Cabinet, not to the Planning and Budget Committee.
Yeah. So and it Ashley just whispered in my ear that the Chancellor had confirmed that there's going to be limited feedback. I would suggest, as staff council representatives, when we hear feedback, let's collect it, because we can bring it back, even if it's then not going to be officially how they wanted it. We can still bring it back through pre-staff or through just an email to the chancellor's office or through a resolution. We have any number of mechanisms to do that.
And just one final communication on that, too. Sorry, I know we're really tight on time. But
that's my fault, not yours.
As people are commenting on it and as people are giving feedback, I just keep in mind the circumstances of the cut. The budget was cut from the governor and the legislature based on a 5% reduction to our personnel budget. And so all of the cuts proposed by the Planning and Budget Committee are an attempt to move away from unstrategic layoffs, essentially. And you give feedback, definitely give very thoughtful feedback, but the alternative is not business as usual. The alternative is positions one way or another. And so definitely as we give feedback, I want to keep that in mind that the alternatives are not pleasant either. So.
Yeah, I second that right there.
All right, for the ad hoc committee reports, Jessica, do you want to say anything for the Cornerstone Award?
Yeah, we had the pleasure of going through all the nominations. There are some really great nominations in there. They asked for about 3 to 5, but we really felt that there were 2 outstanding employees that were nominated that we sent to the chancellor. In my meetings, I had, at the time, he hadn't requested any additional nominations from us, and I am happy to say that he has chosen the winner of the award, and we'll get to see that tomorrow. So, excited.
And for the term-funded ad hoc committee, the meeting minutes for their meeting are attached, along with a list of questions. Some of those were brought up to Brad today. I'd say take a look, and I expect we'll be talking, as staff council, we'll be talking about this one again, especially once we get a chance to see this policy that Brad talked about. So with that, no other objections, we'll go ahead and turn off the recording and move to roundtable discussion.